Say hi to spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 4/29, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.
Welcome to Golden State of Mindcast. This is Ivan, joined by Bram and Nate. Yesterday was Tuesday, and last night was the Warriors getting to 16-0. The record to start a season, pretty much annihilating the Lakers in an ungodly fashion. How do you guys feel today?
Great, and you know, obviously they're 16-0, but also, you know, I'm going to say something that I'm going to regret probably, but watching, you know, I guess one way to phrase it was the passing of the torch from Kobe to a new superstar in such dramatic fashion, I'm putting this very generously, was very enjoyable for me. I have not been a huge Kobe fan throughout his career, and I maybe derived too much enjoyment from that.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a whole piece this morning sort of documenting the scene, and part of that was talking about the first some physics. I got into how in a closed environment, there's only a set amount of energy, and it has to be transferred from one action to another, basically, and that the Warriors stole all of Kobe's energy last night once and for all.
Yeah.
It felt that way. I mean, I was there, and it was tough. I mean, Warriors fans booed him just harshly. I mean, the one of the loudest sounds of the night was when they did introduce Kobe in introductions. But then he went 1 for 14 with 4 points, which is the worst shooting night of his life. And I guess I feel privileged to have seen that. History was made in a few different ways last night.
Yeah,
it's, I mean, if the Warriors were taking Kobe's energy last night, maybe they've been taking it all season, and maybe even last season. It's kind of too bad. I mean, think what you will about Kobe, but it has been a kind of a long, illustrious, impressive career. He's one of the top five players of all time by many measures. And, you know, it's time to hang him up, and it's always kind of upsetting to see somebody not hang him up when they should. And I think that, you know, a lot of people would agree this is about time. It's kind of puzzling to think what the Lakers are doing right now. Like, are they're still playing Kobe and he's taking all these shots. They obviously can't rein him in, or maybe they don't want to. I was listening to, I think it was Zach Lowe's podcast. He was talking to Shane Battier, and Zach Lowe wondering, you know, maybe this is the most diabolical tank job of all time. Where they're gonna keep firing Scott around. He's there only to tank for them, and they keep talking the talk like they're, you know, they're gonna try to win and keep playing Kobe because it's a good thing for the team. But I mean, it's clearly not. That whatever they're doing is not working if they're trying to win games.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to think about how this would fit into a tank strategy, only because normally in a tank strategy you would do that also by playing the young kids, right? So, you know, yes, he's playing Kobe a lot, and Kobe's taking a lot of shots, and that could be a design to help the team lose. But then why not play the Russells, like a guy like D'Angelo Russell at the end of the game?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't play at all in the fourth.
Yeah.
So again,
I don't know what they're doing. It was actually kind of sad to watch, just, you know, this is so cliched, but it's kind of true. I mean, this is the organization that, you know, we're used to seeing trounce the Warriors for so long, and they've just been decimated in about, you know, 2 to 3 years time. And, you know, Kobe has to take some responsibility for that with his contract. You know, the people make arguments about whether any free agents would want to play with Kobe. Byron Scott certainly takes some blame, but I think we're probably spending too much time blaming individual people. I think that blame is spread around pretty evenly for everybody but the younger players. I mean, it's a mess right now. It's probably more of a mess than Yeah, I'll just throw this out there. I mean, is it more of a mess than what the Warriors went through? And that, like, two decades of awfulness?
I think it's
a mess.
Yeah, it's more pronounced because of their previous success.
Yeah,
and because the same superstar is still at the helm.
Right.
You know? Like, the Warriors never had that player.
Right.
And they never experienced any success.
So it
was just like, I mean, the status quo was just sucking.
Right.
You know? And so I think that, and also, I mean, Warriors fans are very rabid in their way, and we really care about the team. But, like, if they lost a bunch of games, like, we still love the team, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like with the Lakers, I mean, of course, like, Lakers fans are, will stick by the team, but the Lakers not being competitive is a world-changing event in Los Angeles and around the world. And
it
people
is.
Don't know what to do, you know? And I feel like a lot of people's lives have been savagely turned upside down by just this new reality in which the Lakers just aren't always going to be competitive. And I mean, Kobe still physically looks like himself. He talks like himself. He moves like himself, not on the basketball court. But then he gets out there, and I tweeted this in the Golden State of Mind handle last night, but every time he touched the ball, it was just a tragedy for the Lakers. Like, for about the second and third quarters, when he, because I don't think he played in the fourth, but that like middle part of the game, I mean, every time he touched the ball, just something horrible happened for the Lakers. And it was just, it was like the gonzo alternate reality of Kobe's entire career.
Yeah.
You know?
And another thing that Zach Lowe said on that topic is that he made this statement that right now Kobe is the single most detrimental player in the league to his team.
Jeez.
Dude, I fully, after seeing him, play live, and again, like, I'm not streaming a bunch of Lakers games when I'm home because who wants to watch the Lakers?
Right.
I mean, they're the Lakers, and also they are bad. But, like, I watched him play in person, and I, of course, you hear people say that. I was shocked because Lowe is always right, but he's especially right in this case.
Yeah.
And it's like you say, it's more pronounced because of the expectations about the Lakers over time and compared to the Warriors, where for us, the Lakers for so long were Golden State of Mind's like arch rival. It's like, oh, we're playing the Lakers, we must beat the Lakers, like we hate them so much. And the Lakers are like, we have no idea who this team is, you know. Like, we were completely unknowns. It was one of those one of those not rivalries,
right?
And it's crazy to think that it's I mean, I don't know if it's the opposite now, but they are totally an afterthought on the schedule.
Yeah.
And the Warriors were, you know, playing a C-plus game maybe yesterday, maybe a B-minus game, but they didn't really try that hard.
No.
And there wasn't much resistance to on their way to a 40-point victory. So kind of crazy how that's flipped around and how that's going to flip around for the Lakers again in the future. I mean, they're going to lose their top three draft pick if they don't finish in the top three. They're giving it to Philadelphia. So that's another – Are they tanking so that they can keep that? Anyway, we don't need to talk about the Lakers for
so
half
much
an hour.
Great juicy stuff to talk about. We haven't even gotten into the Buss family situation, any of that. So, yeah. I mean, I don't think we should.
No, we shouldn't.
Just throwing it out.
Well, this is like Bram, you've been saying the past couple of times we jumped on the podcast that, like, the Warriors just keep winning. There's no controversy around the team. Like, everybody's playing pretty well. Like, that's not really that much to talk about. Like, we'll find some stuff, obviously. But, like, the Lakers, yeah, they're ripe. They're like, oh, there's so much there.
Well, that's why when you have a team that is bad, like, oftentimes traffic numbers online are just exponentially larger because everybody wants to read about a tragedy. I mean, that's why Macbeth is one of the best plays of all time, you know, because everything goes wrong. And, I mean, the Lakers are a living, breathing, walking Shakespeare tragedy currently with family intrigue. And, like, the angry former king holding onto his throne, and et cetera. So, anyways, let's move on.
All right. So Warriors 16-0, it's a milestone, obviously. Historical team if they weren't already. Are there any other milestones that you guys are looking to see out of this team? I mean, the sky's the limit, kind of. And one thing I was thinking about noted yesterday that I heard on the broadcast that – Their last home loss during the regular season was against Chicago in an overtime game January 27th of this year.
Wow.
Like, they have a legit chance to go an entire calendar year without a loss at home in the regular season. Like, that is mind-boggling to me. And the further we get into this streak, into this season that's been incredible so far, is like, how many other just crazy numbers can we come up with that, like, when you, like, put it in perspective and think about how the Warriors used to be and think about even just the overall history of the league, like, holy crap.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think the two that really stick out that if it keeps going this way will come into play are obviously the Lakers' consecutive regular season game winning streak, which I believe that the games that the Warriors won last season add to that as well. So the playoff losses to Memphis, et cetera, like, don't count. So they're actually – their current winning streak is higher than 16. I can't actually remember exactly what it is, but I think I heard that they're tied for fourth all time now. And if this keeps going, I mean, they legitimately have a chance to hit that mark that the Lakers set. And then obviously the other one, even though I wrote that we shouldn't ever compare them to other teams just today, but that – the 72-win Bulls. I mean, that's then the next one that potentially comes into play, for better or for worse.
Yeah. I think the one that's really interesting is it's something that kind of, like, gets brushed under the rug a little bit, but I think this most consecutive threes in a game and most consecutive game with a three is really interesting to me because I think Curry's going to obliterate this record. Kyle Korver said it, last year with 127? And I just feel like Curry, the thing that's amazing about Curry compared to the other people who might be on that list, like a Korver, even a Dana Barros, who, you know, Curry tied and who caught up to last night. Yeah, I think the thing is that Curry can create his own threes at such a proficient rate that what would it look like for Curry to have a game without a three? I mean, it's like at this point in time, the way he's playing, it's just like, it's hard to even imagine that happening. And I just don't think – I think he's going to put that record so far out in advance that, you know, it's a record that maybe no one even ever thought about before, like, last year, before, like, Korver said it. But I think it's going to be one of the signs of Curry's greatness that maybe it, because it's so difficult to create threes the way he does it, that no one's going to touch it in the end. And it's going to be the mark of his greatness in a way that I think people underestimate down the line. I've never seen anybody shoot threes like this. I mean, it's hard to even imagine prior to Curry. You know, I was a big Reggie Miller fan growing up. And, you know, I would think Reggie Miller flies around all these screens and hits a three. And I would just marvel at that. And now you look at Curry, he can fly around the screen, grab the ball, pump fake, step back, hit a three from like 30 feet away. And it's just like, it's next level, unfathomable stuff to me. And I think that's something I'm always going to remember. I expect him to obviously pass Korver, is what I'm saying. But we'll see how far out he gets that record.
Yeah, and his threes, are going to continue to get better just because he's in his prime. But the other crazy thing that Steph Curry is doing this year is how much better he's hitting from two, hitting finishing at the rim. Like the percentages are pretty staggering compared to how he entered the league.
Right.
And he's just gotten so much better. And I think that I don't know. I remember if we talked about this before, but I think the ball handling is really really critical there. In how. How adept he's become. Kyrie Irving, I don't know, but Steph Curry, I think, has the best dribbles in the league, and he has this ability to, like, just completely not think about what he's doing as he's dribbling, like all of those crazy drills with the lasers and the, you know, goggles and everything that he's been doing. And I think that probably is something that can really, really help players finish at the rim and, kind of dribble around screens without thinking at all. I wonder what the effect is and whether we're going to see more players, do those sorts of drills and whether that's kind of an evolution of the game with that kind of technological, training that Steph's been doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is such a perfect storm, too. I mean, just how he came into the league and the handle and the shot that he had and that he worked to get. And then with the evolution of the game led by the Spurs and by other teams and then by the Warriors and the Hawks, obviously, with Korver, like shooting this amount of, those amount of three-point shots. Yeah, I mean, it is something that 10 years ago you never would have predicted that, I think.
Right. Yeah.
So and the Warriors, other thing about the ball handling that I actually think is really interesting that kind of goes overlooked is, you know, people call Curry an unathletic person. The core strength, I mean, one of the things he worked on, you know, years back they were talking about was his core strength and his ability in his balance and his coordination. And I think those are things that really show up, especially in all those like off the dribble threes. I mean, he has remarkably strong core, and that's an athleticism. It's not the jump out of the building athleticism, but it's an athleticism that I think goes way underrated and is what makes him who he is. And it's, I mean, they talked about that with Steve Nash too. It's one of the things that will, I think, end up setting him apart, that no one has to be able to step back away from the basket, set your feet like this, those famous play against the Clippers now, where he's dribbling through five people with his head down. He steps back behind the 3-point line, manages to set his feet and get the strength to put the ball, to launch the ball up into the hoop. That's actually a remarkable feat. I mean, just from a strength and athleticism perspective. So I think we need to stop saying he's unathletic and just say he's not, you know, he's just not an above the rim athlete. I mean, the fact that he can barely dunk. Yes, he doesn't look athletic, but he is amazingly athletic, and I think it's time to acknowledge that.
If your definition of athleticism excludes Steph Curry from that, but then it's either a bad definition of athleticism or we just need to stop talking about that at all, because if he's not as athletic compared to some players by certain metrics, then but it's not stopping him from doing what he's doing, right? So then athleticism maybe isn't that valuable if you're defining it that way.
Well, but I think it's a different type of athleticism. And I actually just looked up this article again. Tom Ziller, in his Good Morning with Basketball, sent out a link to a New York Times article that Scott, I'm going to butcher this, but Cacciola, I hope.
Oh, yeah, it was a great article.
wrote about, and it's called Even Ballet Dancers Are in Awe of Stephen Curry's Moves. And it's basically just about, I mean, you know, you think of ballet dancers as being so graceful, but the athleticism that it requires to maintain their composure while executing a 12-foot leap and doing a pirouette. I mean, it's the same sort of basic athleticism that figure skaters have or something, that it's sneaky athleticism. It's not like, I'm going to jump over this fence and grab your face and punch it into the other side of the world, but like, I'm going to dance around you and you're not going to be able to catch me because you think I'm moving so slow, but you can't, you know, you can't touch me.
Right.
So I think it's just, you know, and again, and this is another thing that the Warriors have done is they've rewritten the rules of what is imaginable. I mean, they have taken what we thought was possible and just upended it and taken things into a stratosphere that I think that nobody really saw coming. And it's sort of the perfect analogy of that is Steph's athleticism, you know, and that he is so in control of both his body, his mind, his actions, his voice, what he says, how he handles the media. I mean, his composure is next level generation. It's all kind of part of the same package. And, you know, him being the leader, the rest of the guys take the cues from him.
Yep.
So talking about Steph, the ESPN, I think yesterday or today, released their RPM numbers, the real plus minus stat for the 2015-2016 season. Of course, Steph's number one at 8.85. Number two is 7.23 is Russell Westbrook. And then it kind of goes down from there in an orderly fashion, you know, by you know, 0.2 difference. So Steph is way ahead there. Number five, Draymond Green at 5.68. Have you guys looked at this? Do you know? Can you guess who the third Warrior is on the real plus minus?
Man, I haven't looked, so this is going to be interesting.
I haven't looked. I would guess, I think, Iguodala. Oh,
what do you think, Graham?
I mean, I think it's Iguodala too, but I'm going to go way out on limb and say Azili.
Ding, ding, ding. Festus Azili.
You guys can't see it, but I'm doing a little happy dance. dance.
He's number 25. Number 25 in the league. Just one slot ahead of Kevin Durant.
Man, I feel so smart.
And Carmelo
right now.
Anthony, Mark Gasol. So
Azili is ahead of Durant? That's crazy.
Azili's ahead of Durant, Anthony Gasol, Roy Hibbert, of course. James Harden is number 31. DeMarcus Cousins all the way at 37. So this might be one of those things where you start looking at the stat and you're like, clearly, you know, something might be off a little bit here. But this does go, you know, to the point that, like, Azeelee, you know, has been kind of a minus player the first couple of years of his season, at least. And, you know, he had started to have an uptick last year. But he's gotten a lot more time this year, and he's obviously healthy. He's learned the system more. But all of these other players getting so much better and improving at the same time, I think, is, you know, it's, you're going to have good ratings if, like, all you do is catch lobs and just like hammer down massive dunks, right? Like,
yeah. And I know that's real plus minus, but I think just like actual plus minus, I'm looking it up right now, but the top five are all Warriors, I think. And I mean, that's just because they've been blowing people out.
Azeelee's real plus minus is coming from his defensive impact, actually. He's got 2.88 out of 2.99, so he's not much of an offensive plus, though. He is an offensive plus this year, but defensively he's been fantastic. You know, people talk about the Warriors like, oh, there's nowhere for them to go. Like, they're already as good as they could possibly be, but they are still only fourth in defense this year. Like,
well, what are they doing, bums?
Fire Walton.
Hashtag Fire Walton, man.
I by the way, I just looked up those plus minus statistics, and I mean, this is something that we've covered and is no surprise, but literally one is Steph, two is Draymond, three is Andre, four is Clay, and five is Harrison, which is that five man lineup is the small ball death squad.
Yeah.
So, right. I mean, they've been getting so much national love for that lineup, and eventually somebody's, probably Cleveland's going to figure out how to do something that's going to, but again, like, I don't know. I mean, I was at the game last night, and Walton put that lineup in. It was like a sort of close game. It was, I forget exactly what it was, but it was maybe, I think it was 16-9, and, you know, they took a timeout, and I was tweeting that, you know, I was just, I tweeted out the score, and the Lakers handle actually tweeted back at me, and they said single digits and clap, 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 which was very funny. But then they put, you know, Walton came back with that lineup of Steph, Dre, Andre, Clay, and Harrison, and all of a sudden they're up by 22 or something, you know, in the next few minutes. It happened quick. And then from there, it was just a blowout. So, and another thing that made me think of too is that how surreal must it be for Walton to just decimate his former squad with Kobe still on the team while also knowing in his heart and probably having a secret agreement with one of the bosses that he will be the head coach of the Lakers in 2 years, you know.
Ooh, starting rumors, man.
Which is completely unfounded. That's just me talking shop, as I call it.
I actually agree with that. I think it would be weird. It has to be weird for Kobe. I mean, it's just one of those, you know, we're gonna have, like, you know, Sports Illustrated used to have that thing, you know, today's sign that the apocalypse is upon us. I mean, this is going to be like today's sign that Kobe should retire. You just lost to Luke Walton coaching on the other end. I mean, it's one of those things where, like, in his head, I know a competitor like that is looking at that, and it just ticks him off even more. And it is kind of surreal to think of Luke Walton, the guy, like, at the end of Kobe's bench, is now coaching against him on this juggernaut team that just destroyed him. And, I mean, and Byron Scott, too. I mean, who would have thought, you know, I said this before among staff, like, who would have thought years ago that Luke Walton would somehow outcoach Byron Scott coaching the Lakers? I mean, that's just, the whole thing is just a surreal experience. And the whole game, like, it's obvious why the game was so popular. And everybody was like, it's like a must-see event, even though you knew the outcome before it started.
Right.
Even though I didn't jinx anything this time, Bram. But, you know, it's just, it is weird.
Last night on Twitter, Network was having fun with Walton and the coaching situation. First of all, I think it was him pointing out that Walton is like 2 years younger than Kobe.
Yeah.
Oh God, really?
Yeah.
And then going on to make jokes about you know, the Warriors could just replace Luke Walton with, like, celebrities as their coaches. like what was it? Yeah, now introducing your guest coach for tonight, Susan Boyle. And then underneath, final score, Warriors 115, Phoenix 92 or something like that.
Right.
Sorry to jump in, but this does bring up a conversation that we were having sort of off air. which is, how is it that these coaches, a la Luke Walton and Steve Kerr, and people that have sort of jumped around in the league and weren't necessarily, they weren't obviously stars in their own right, are seemingly out-coaching and outperforming at, in their post-playing career, players who were these superstar type of players, you know, as in Jordan and a couple other people. And I, you know, my gut reaction is just that people like Luke, I mean, A, they weren't playing that much. And so he probably had Phil's ear all the time, as did Kerr with, you know, Popovich and Phil and all these people. But it just is interesting that a lot of these coaches you see, Scott Brooks, who was successful for a while, were these sort of like weird end of the bench players that then have assimilated all the knowledge that perchance they, you know, learned on the bench and are able to sort of apply it in a real time situation. But anyways,
yeah, I think there's a ton of factors that could go into that. And definitely you're right. Like sitting on the end of the bench, like you have more time to watch the game and to sit with coaches and kind of look at it from a different perspective rather than, you know, just running up and down the court and playing a little more instinctively. You have to think about it a lot more. You also wonder if there's to a degree, it's kind of like, in order to kind of make an NBA roster, you have to have something that's really special, right? And those guys are, you know, the thing that's making them special isn't like, you know, raw athleticism or raw talent. They've gotten there because of something else, whether that's their basketball IQ or being specialists or what have you. But if it is, you know, IQ and just an understanding of the game and being able to kind of overcome whatever deficiencies they do have, such that they're good enough to be on a roster but not good enough to play very much, kind of shows that, like, you know, they had those intangibles that might not lead to playing great basketball, but good enough to, like, keep around and then learn and kind of share that knowledge with other people.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, you know, I've worked in education for a while, so I think this is an interesting analogy. Like, I think the one thing is that being a great teacher is very different than being a great principal. And they're two discrete skill sets. Even though teachers, you know, sometimes do get promoted to principal, you're a really veteran teacher, you do a really good job, people want to say, yo, you should be promoted. And they're two very different things. I think the same thing with coaching and playing. Like, we can't assume that a great player has the skill set of managing people and seeing the big picture, being able to figure, you know, think about what Kerr did last year. That ability to somehow talk to Iguodala about coming off the bench. I mean, that's just, it was a subtle move, and I think it's kind of like, you know, got glossed over, but that's something a lot of coaches could never pull off. And somehow he was able to get Iguodala to buy into that. And I think those little moves that you make, the willingness to take those kind of risks, the opposite of what Byron Scott is doing right now, which is, you know, looking at privileging the team success over individual success. I think those things are things that don't necessarily just come from being a great player. And I think, you know, one thing they talk about sometimes is, you know, a great player is seeing the game at such a high speed that they have a hard time even communicating it to the people that don't see it at such a high speed. And right. So they're thinking, you know, just go out there. I think Larry Bird might have been one player who said that at one time, that, you know, you're thinking, go out there and just do this. And they, no matter what you say, they won't do that. And, right. You know, I think great coaches can figure out a way to make that happen. Larry Bird, on the other hand, I think was interesting because, you know, Larry Bird wasn't someone that was overly emotional or overly expressive on the sideline. And he had a veteran team, you know, that the Mark Jackson, Reggie Miller team, that they just needed to let them play. And I think he understood that. You know, he was a great player. He knew he had a very good player in Reggie Miller, a solid point guard in Jackson, and they had some talent around them, and they just knew that we just got to let these guys play and figure out how to put them in position to succeed and let them go. So I think it's being able to balance all those different things, and that can be hard for someone sometimes who's used to just exerting their will and making it happen, and suddenly you have to step back and be right. Someone who gets listened to.
And I think somebody like Byron, who was on that Showtime team, and, you know, Kobe having the career that he's had, I feel like the game is changing so much, and it always has. I mean, every part of every era has a different sort of aspect to it. And you can't just do the same things because the game has moved on and evolved and adapted into a different thing. in part to stop that exact type of motion.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's an easy thing that happens, and you see it happening with this Lakers team where they're just like, well, we'll just be the Lakers and it'll work. And it's not going to work,
right.
You know? And there's a certain, I think that there's a certain stubbornness that comes along with being a great player, which is just like, well, I'm just going to win.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to happen. And that's what makes them great. But that also, like, it can really work against you when you have to then, when you can't just go out there and change the outcome single-handedly, you know?
Right. Right.
I think we might be seeing that with the Houston Rockets this season too, where there was this assumption that, like, you know, they were the number two seed last year, like Harden should have won the MVP, like, you know, we're just going to go out and do the thing like we usually do, and you know, they don't look like they don't look like they like playing with each other. I don't know if they're in great shape. And I think that they just, like you say, just expected, you know, hey, I'm a great player, so this is going to work out. And, clearly is not.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, what's interesting along those lines is we're going back to Azealia a little bit. Charles Barkley and Shaq had an interesting, I mean, obviously if Charles Barkley and Shaq are arguing over anything, maybe it isn't that interesting, but it was interesting in that they were arguing about whether DeAndre Jordan needs to develop his post game or whether the Clippers need to make an effort to go to him more often. And it's interesting because you look at Festus Ezeli, we're going back to those RPM stats. I mean, one of the really interesting thing about the Warriors is that, you know, Draymond Green is clearly looking for Festus Ezeli lobs on every single play. I mean, it's like if he has the ball in the paint, the first thing he's looking to do is go to Festus Ezeli. I think one time it looked like Festus was going to go for like a reverse lob. I mean, it's just craziness, but it's like, it's so cool to see this team, you know, of a guy of Draymond's increasing stature, you know, guys like Curry, guys like Iguodala, they are looking to help Festus succeed, like actively looking to do that. And you don't always see that on NBA teams. And, you know, we don't have to debate whether Festus is better than DeAndre Jordan. I don't really care to, but I think it is interesting that, you know, DeAndre really does struggle to find a role on that team. And the Warriors are finally doing everything they can to find roles for everybody on the court at all times, and, you know, passing up shots, passing up layups for threes, making the extra pass. And I think that's something that, you know, beyond coaching, makes that team really special, because not every team has that kind of chemistry. And I think we're starting to see signs. You know, in the past, I think in the Mark Jackson era, that chemistry was talked about as a locker thing, you know, as a locker room thing. And I think now we're really starting to see how it shows up on the court. When guys are actually looking to help a guy like Festus succeed, looking to help Bogut get touches, that's something they don't have to do. Curry does not have to pass the ball, and no one will be mad at him.
Yeah. It's you know? It's like an understanding of what individuals need to help everybody else on the team, right?
Right.
Like, Festus isn't a great offensive player, but getting him involved on offense, and you hear about this all the time with big men. You just if you can try to get them involved, they're gonna feel better about
right.
their role on the team, and they're probably gonna end up playing better defense for you when that
right.
happens. I was just listening to this. I don't know. I can't quite remember who the interview was with. They were talking about Ben Wallace when he joined the Chicago Bulls. And he was not happy, wasn't having a great season. And this person, you know, got in touch with
David Thorpe.
David Thorpe
on Zach Lowe's
right.
podcast. Yeah.
Right. So he got in touch with Chauncey Billups and said, like, hey, how did you make this guy happy? Like, how did you get him motivated? And it was just like, just give him the ball on the first possession every game, no matter what he does with it. Just give him the ball, and you don't have to pass to him the rest of the game if you don't
right.
want to, because he's not going to do anything with it. But, like, just show that, like, hey, you're here. We know you're here on offense. We need you. And so it's the psychology of that too. It's like you can even sacrifice that first possession of the game as long as you're getting that, you know, kind of everybody involved and happy and feeling like they're contributing.
Right, and it feels like, you know, it almost feels like childhood psychology, right? Like, make sure DeAndre feels needed. Make sure Festus feels needed. Like, it's a bunch of fluff. But the reality is, even these, like, you know, really strong, big dudes who are making millions of dollars need to feel some validation every day, or it's hard to stay motivated. And I think that's something that people really overlook when they look at pro sports. I think these are people. These are not just widgets that go over there and perform based on analytics, you know?
Totally. And I mean, that's something that this team and this training staff, and I think especially Steve Kerr, really understands. I was hanging out with Lawrence Scott, the video producer, before the game yesterday, and he actually put up a really beautiful video just now on Warriors TV just a couple minutes ago, that he was talking about that Steve Kerr actually came into the locker room ahead of the game last night, and or maybe it was at shoot around actually, and talked to the guys, and he just reminded them of what their four core values are. And I'm remembering off the top of my head, so I'm probably going to mess it up, but it was the first one, and Walton was talking about this last night too, but the first one was joy, you know? I mean, above and beyond anything that they do on the basketball court, he wants them to feel joy, which we feel joy. I mean, it's a transitive sense of, it's that energy that you feel when the Warriors are playing at the top of their game. There was also compassion, you know, just compassion for each other, competitiveness, and the fourth one, communication I'm going with, although I think I just made that up. But, I mean, the team, and I wrote about this today too, but when the team is at the peak of their powers, it really doesn't matter who they're playing because they're striving for something greater than themselves. You know, they're striving for this collective group thought sort of approach to playing basketball, which is completely team-based and it's not dependent on any one player going off. And when they all work together, I mean, it's such a cliche, but when they work together, they can achieve things that are just unheard of. And we saw that when the small ball lineup came in last night, they went up by 20. Yeah. So,
yeah. Actually, speaking of small ball, I got to give a shout out to this GSM reader, Jim, who emailed about the idea of having someone in Oracle Arena actually like play a bell when the small ball lineup, like a big, like ominous bell when the small ball lineup comes in.
Oh, like a gong?
Like a gong, like doom, doom. And I think that would be kind of awesome.
I want to do that. Yeah, I mean, I play drums.
I think it should happen.
I could hit that real hard. Just like put it up.
Lower the lights in the arena again. Yeah, make it all dark.
Exactly. As the substitution is happening, everything.
And then they all just turn to the opposition and do a little samurai bow and just like just acknowledge the opponent and then just, you know, and then gut them.
Yes. I think this whole image is a great idea. We should definitely make it happen.
All right. Warriors staff, if you're listening, you can give us the credit for this idea.
Please
when you make it happen.
Please do.
We're running a little on time. I wanted to talk about Barnes, but we can wait okay. till the next time he's there's a few stories that we can find on this Warriors team of players just playing out of their minds and you know, doing things that we've been hoping that we would see from them. But we'll talk about Barnes next time. Coming up, the schedule gets a little tricky with a long road trip. We have Phoenix on Friday, and then a back-to-back Sacramento on Saturday, and then they go on the road for looks like 7 games on the East Coast. So that's what we have in store for the first part of December, it should be fun to see if they can keep this win streak up. You know, that it's one interesting thing that looking at the schedule. Yeah, that's a big roadie, but the top teams, like talking about Spurs and Cavs and the Thunder, we don't play those guys for a long time.
Yeah,
like the Cavaliers we play on Christmas, obviously. We don't see the Spurs until January 25th, and we don't see the Thunder for the first time until February 6th.
Yeah.
So a long time before the Warriors are kind of tested by the tops in the league.
Yeah.
So we'll see how far this.
I wish I had more to say, but it's unbelievable. How can a team just dominate the entire league like this?
I think it's a dream. We're gonna wake up, and Cohen's still gonna own the team. And Nate, we never will have met, and it's just going to be sadness and despair.
That's true. That's actually
the Lakers are still going to be on top, and we're going to think that they're our rivals, and you know, everything will be right in this world.
Are we still going to have Monte Ellis, or are we going to?
Yes,
go? Of course.
Yeah, yeah. No, we're going to have Monte, and we never drafted Steph. We drafted somebody.
Jordan.
No, we drafted Johnny Flynn.
Oh my goodness!
we must end this podcast.
Yes, please.
Now.
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We hope that you're traveling safe, and you know, Godspeed.
Absolutely. If you're not subscribed to the podcast, please do jump on to iTunes. Look for Mindcast. Go to blog.radio.com and search Golden State of Mind there. You can subscribe via the RSS feed as well to your standard podcast software. And we'll be talking to you soon on Golden State of Mindcast. Thanks. That's a terrible ending, but
can you record the part where you said that's a terrible ending? Just leave it there.
I that's fine. Whatever. Yeah. I don't care.
Say hi to Spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 429, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.